Hello, and welcome to another edition of Brussels Sprouts. I'm Andrea Kendall Taylor.
And I'm Rachel Rizzo.
And we're so glad you can join us. Today, we're sitting down with the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Defense from Latvia, Dr. Artis Pabriks. Thank you for joining us. We're so glad you can be with us today.
Thank you for inviting. I'm all yours.
For those of you who aren't familiar with the minister, I'll give a little brief background. He has been the Minister of Defense and Deputy Prime Minister since January 2019. He's previously served as a member of the European Parliament. This is actually his second term as Minister of Defense, where he served from 2010 to 2014. And he's also served as the Minister of Foreign Affairs from 2004 to 2007, and a member of the Seimas, the Latvian Parliament. So, quite a long and impressive track record. We're so glad that you can be here. I think we want to start with the most obvious question, given that you've just come from a meeting with now Secretary Shanahan. Any impressions, first impressions from your meeting with the Secretary?
Well, very positive impressions, of course. We are meeting officially first time, and also first time on the US soil. We had a brief meeting in NATO quarters in Brussels a few months ago, but here it was more official, of course, and it was nice to meet him in Pentagon, and it was nice to be probably the first defense minister from another country just after nomination, so I congratulated him with that.
Absolutely, and I think that's something too with his first, I think, official visit with Latvia, so that's a kind of a fun thing for you all, I would imagine.
Well, we are among the best partners for United States, and United States are extremely relevant and good partner and friend for us, either in difficult times or in more easy times. So we highly value this friendship, and this was one of the first sentences I also was delivering, because U.S.-Latvian relationship have no like ones in the world, probably.
I wanted to start, so actually yesterday I just testified in Congress on the issue of Chinese influence in Europe. And so kind of from your perspective, I wonder what that picture looks like. Can you talk about what the world looks like from the Latvian perspective and what you see the Chinese are doing in Europe and also specifically in the Baltic region?
Well, we can see that China is rising very fast, Chinese economy is growing very fast, and of course Chinese influence have been growing for last decades or so in all continents, and Europe is not an exclusion. So the question is, of course, what we have to pose ourselves, either as Europeans or as North Americans. Do we deal with these influences and relationship with China alone, each on our own, or we are trying to formulate a more common policies? So that's a big question. Of course, I would be advocating the second one, because if we speak about liberal democracies, if we speak about transatlantic ties, if we speak about common European and North American interests, then it would be only logical to coordinate our efforts and to see these policies from the common position.
One of the things that came up in the hearing is the implication of Chinese influence for NATO and for kind of military operations in Europe. And one of the things we talked a lot about in the hearing was increasing control by the Chinese of ports and also of rail. Can you talk a little bit about what you see? Where have investments from China been focused on in the Baltics? Are there any areas that have been most concerning from your perspective?
Well, at this moment, we are not facing very large Chinese investments. Of course, there are investors also looking for some port facilities in the Baltic states and also particularly in Latvia. Chinese are not the only ones, but I would rather say that if you're looking to Chinese investments in general in European continent, then they have a particular interest to Central and Eastern European countries, because these are the countries where developments are happening much faster. So there is also more necessity for the financial investments, which are not always provided maybe by some other partners, either in the Western Europe or somewhere else. And Chinese business and government is very closely observing this. So if there is an opening, they will do this. The only thing what I could suggest, if you ask about the Latvian case, American investors, be prepared to invest in my country. Mm-hmm. And that would be the best way how to cooperate and see a friendly investments, because we always would appreciate American investments in Latvia. And we know that Latvians are very eager also to invest in different industries, despite of our size, also in the United States.
So NATO just celebrated its 70th anniversary, and it seems like China has become a topic that leaders in Brussels are discussing more and more often. And I think one of the things that NATO leaders have said is that China doesn't pose a direct military threat to NATO, which I think is relatively clear at this point. But I think that discussions are also surrounding the fact that NATO is trying to decide if and what role it plays in approaching China, in countering China if necessary. Do you see a specific role for NATO when it comes to China?
Well, it's not only a question about China. It's mm-hmm. also a question which is more frequently appearing in Brussels and also in our national capitals, either it is North America or Europe, which is a Russian case, because yeah. Russia is much closer with borders to Europe, with energy policies, also with investment policies. So looking from the Latvian perspective, I would say that we already had in place a number of years ago screening through the prism of security, screening of all types of investments, and we started with Russia. Now, when other countries in Europe is seeing a Baltic states as a litmus test for different outside influences, similar approach is happening is happening in other EU countries, where they would like to have such type of screenings also for Chinese investments. Now, as far as common grounds for EU or NATO, I would say that that gives us the necessity and better understanding how we can cooperate and how we should cooperate with the third countries outside NATO, such countries as Japan, South Korea, New Zealand, Australia, maybe Singapore. So we have to build alliances. We have to sit around the table and try to forge common policies. This is what is at stake also in NATO and what NATO countries understand.
So you've brought up the issue of Russia, which I think it's surprising that that wasn't the first place that we've started, because normally when we're talking to our Baltic companions, that's normally the first place that the conversation starts.
We are not a one-issue country.
Absolutely not.
And one-issue region. But if we have to mention Russia here, we have to remember that Russian policies vis-a-vis the West, or if we want to have a better understanding of Russian policies regarding the West, then Baltic states is somehow considered and can be considered rightly as a litmus test. What they are doing to us, what their policies are in our region, very frequently later is translated in the similar policies in many other countries, either it is possibilities to interfere in elections or regarding businesses or support to different parties or politicians. So our example and our expertise, in fact, could be very, very interesting for also North Americans and United States.
Absolutely. And I think that raises two questions that I want to ask. The first one is, so certainly with 2014, I would suppose then that the United States and the rest of Europe have woken up finally to the threat that you have felt for decades.
Well, better later than never.
So how do you think we're doing? How do you think the U.S., NATO, how is Europe doing in terms of deterring Russian aggression? What would you say? What does that view look like from Latvia?
It looks better, as there's much more understanding. If in former times, like 15 years ago, if we would speak about such type of threat or hypothetical threat, then they would tell, look, you're just a troublemaker. Don't talk about these things. Everything is fine. We will manage this stuff. The country changed. The policy changed. Unfortunately, after 2014 and war in Ukraine and annexation of Crimea by Russia showed that, unfortunately, the Baltic approach, the Latvian warnings have been very correct. Mm-hmm. So that gave us possibility also to have a more serious talk about the deterrence and relationship towards Russia. And just to make it clear, Latvians want a very good relationship with Russia. We want to cooperate, we want to work together, because we are a border country. So if we could have a good relationship with our neighboring country, we would be the first ones to flourish, to have economic development, political cooperation. But differently from some of our Western partners, we can't afford to live in illusion, to have pink glasses. And that means that we are having much more realistic approach, because that threat, what they can pose to other countries of EU or NATO, for us is of existential nature. For the rest, it's maybe not so important. For us, it is. So I think we are a good example, and I think we are doing now much better, but still there's a lot of things to be done.
And you, I mean, you have a front row seat into what's happening inside Russia. And so I wanted to hear your thoughts on kind of Putin, kind of where he is currently, the stability of the regime, kind of how would you describe the domestic internal dynamics inside Russia at the moment?
Well, Russia is not a democratic country. Russia is building its external and internal policies on power and continuation of power. So I think if we have to analyze what is happening in Kremlin, first of all, we don't have a full information, because this policy is made by few people. But secondly, we could also predict that all attempts will be made simply to have a continuity of the power which exists at this moment. So if there will be some undermining to that, either internally, or there will be a necessity to strengthen it by some external actions, that will be taken.
Do you think he feels secure at the moment? Do you think things are going okay from his perspective?
Well, that you have to ask him, but I think he feels quite pretty secure.
Just to shift gears a little bit, so you are a former member of the European Parliament, and I think one of the things that Europe watchers have been reading about, talking about constantly over the past few months is what we can expect in Brussels in just a few weeks. What are some of the things that we should be looking out for when it comes to the European elections in a few weeks? I think a lot of people are saying these could be the most consequential European Parliament elections that we've seen. What are you looking out for? What are you watching for? What should we be watching for?
Well, of course, we have to look for possible influences, meddling in these elections. Mm-hmm. But we know who is the target, and we know and we can assess also the outcome, probably. I don't like to make predictions, because very frequently in the last years we have been making wrong predictions.
Yeah, but those always go well.
I would try to risk to do this. I think that after these elections, European Parliament will be more fragmented than before, mm-hmm. and that would make decision-making and European policy-making more difficult even than up to now. And if you are looking, for instance, from the Russian or maybe interest of some other countries outside, then they will support any political forces which are forwarding and making this fragmentation bigger, because it doesn't matter. Is it right-wing forces or left-wing forces? But it is important that there are more people elected in the parliament who are against EU policies, against United States, anti-American, against transatlantic ties, pro-Russia, against defense, so just name it. So there are a number of subjects, and those subjects will be scrutinized from the perspective of outside influences and assistance. Limited assistance, but still assistance will be given.
You mentioned the word fragmentation, which is something that our team here has been thinking a lot about, the fragmentation of politics in Europe and the fact that we're seeing so many new parties emerging and holding seats in national parliaments. Latvia just had elections in the fall, and I understand it took some time also to form a government there. Can you describe, and especially through that lens of fragmentation, kind of what that process looked like domestically for you?
Well, Latvia is not an isolated country. And of course, if you see the fragmentation going in political circles around the democratic countries, and we are Western country, we are liberal democracy too, so we are not isolated, the same influences happens by us too. Yes, we got a more fragmented also political outcome, which made more difficult to create a government, but the populist influence was not so large. And if I have to describe what is happening in general in democratic West, it is on the one hand fragmentation, but on the other hand it's also a higher polarization of different opinions. And there is no easy medicine for this. I think this will still continue for the next years or so to come.
You mentioned that the increased polarization, but there isn't an easy fix for it. Is Latvia doing anything specifically to, you know, counter populist sentiment in the country or in Europe? I mean, is this something that Latvia is dealing with? And if so, how so?
There's no one super medicine for populism, because populism is basically a dissatisfaction with current elites. It is frequently based on alienation. It is an outcome of maybe also wrong policies of previous politicians. And in many ways, it is also relying on different type of media, because media is basically now a force which very much can influence how society thinks and how society acts. And if you're looking, let's say, 20, 30 years ago, you could easily find one media, like, for instance, I don't know, CNN in America. Yeah. So if you needed to deliver a message to your citizens, then you could use that opportunity, and maybe 90% who listen or watch this media would get the message. Today, you need maybe 10 or 15 different types of media. So new technologies gave a chance for all of us to become writers, mm-hmm. but it also gives us an opportunity not to read or to choose simply the truth. But the fact about truth is you can't choose it. It is either there or it is not there. So in my understanding, complex nature of modern technologies and media policies actually made for many people more difficulty to understand what is truthful and what is not. And that is also one of the methods how countries decided to use it in politics. Because if you look to such countries as Russia or China, there is no free media over there. So media is a weapon, it's propaganda. So if I'm opening a TV screen in a hotel in Europe or maybe North America and I see their RT or Russia Today, then I'm asking myself, why do you still reproduce those fake news?
Yeah, it's such an important point about kind of the state of our media environment today. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that are internal to the story about what's happening in Western democracies. And then, but of course, we see external actors, and in particular Russia, then feeding on these vulnerabilities and also trying to sow confusion and make the truth harder in many cases. And I want to circle back to one of your earlier comments about kind of what you see Russia doing vis-a-vis the Baltics is what the West can expect a couple of years later. And so I wonder if you have any kind of lessons learned in terms of ways to deal with Russian disinformation. What should the United States be thinking about? What do we need to be doing better to help deter and address malign actors like Russia in our media space?
Well, first of all, you have to understand what is really happening on the ground. You must have a daily analysis of news which are coming out and which your citizens are reading and looking. And this is what we are doing. We are having a daily analysis basically on all types of news, including fake news, propaganda news, and we are trying to see in what do they target, what is the percentage rate, in what events do they appear. And then we have probably a technical possibilities to try to cover this and tell, look, you know, you are not a truthful media, you are just an instrument in the hands of somebody else. You have to reconsider that. Maybe we should close this media outlet for a while, or even punish that. But of course, we are a democratic country, so it always should come through the justice system, and it should have enough proofs. Another thing is, of course, we have to educate our citizens. They must understand that communication issues are frequently going also together with such a case as cyber attacks. And we must understand that what is a major target? As you mentioned yourself, confusion. Precisely, the target of such countries is to show that democratic states, free countries, liberal democracies, actually are failing, that they are not capable to answer the modern quests which our societies are facing, and some other political order is probably better. And that other political order is exactly in those countries.
Yeah.
So for those who start to trust these fake news, maybe we should pay a ticket and let visit those countries and see by their own eyes. Do they want to live there?
Exactly. Well, I think we're actually, I think we could ask you many, many more questions, but the time has already flown. I just want to conclude by saying I'm headed to Latvia, to Riga on Sunday.
And congratulations, it's we have a good weather and nice beaches.
I'm very excited. It's going to be my first trip. So any recommendations for what we need to do?
Well, first of all, just walk on the street, enjoy weather and enjoy our friendliness and food, and you will see that we as a traditional Northern European Baltic country has a lot of things what to offer for anybody who comes from US.
I'm really excited, so looking forward to it, and thanks for sitting down with us today.